Welcome to 360 Degree Evaluation. This was something that AC actually asked me to do a presentation on, and I thought it's a pretty useful topic. Basically, it's a tool for developing your administration team, or it could be used for developing staff in general. So, 360 Degree Evaluation. If you go to slide 2, read this little quote, it gives you, and the next one after that, it gives you a little idea of why this is so important. Jack Welch, who is quoted for having saying this, is the chief executive officer for General Electric. Now, General Electric is one of the Fortune 500 companies, meaning the 500 most wealth-producing companies in the country. And he's also recognized as being one of the foremost leaders in the country. And his quote says, "Any company that's going to make it has got to find a way to engage the minds of every single employee. If you're not thinking all the time about making every person more valuable, you don't have a chance. What's the alternative? Wasted minds? Uninvolved people? A labor force that's angry or bored? That doesn't make sense." If you go to the next slide, there's a Chinese proverb. If you want to grow, if you want 1 year of prosperity, grow grain. If you want 10 years of prosperity, grow trees. If you want 100 years of prosperity, grow people. So the goals of this session are to provide an overview of what 360 degree evaluation is, to delineate its benefits, to understand the issues when you're actually conducting it, and to talk about the pitfalls and loopholes that people often run into when they try and implement this sort of system. Normally I'd ask for your expectations, but since this is a one-sided sort of thing, you'll just hope that they will be met in the course of this presentation, and if not, do feel free to contact me and discuss it via email. So an outline. If you like, you can print this page out and sort of keep track of where we are and where we're going. As you can see, there's the goals, you know, an introduction, then kind of the nuts and bolts, and then a review of some pitfalls. So, in essence, 360 degree evaluation is just getting feedback from everyone who knows what that person's performance is like. So for a middle manager, say a unit head, you would have the director or assistant director, the peers if there's more than one unit head, and the counselors all rate this one person's performance. Instead of a judge, you have a jury. And the jury is made up of yourself, the person rates themselves, peers, so people on the same level. For CEOs, you might nominate people who are your peers. Subordinates, some are selected, but you never know which ones. Superiors, again, for CEOs or owners, it might be the board of directors. And sometimes customers are surveyed, campers or parents in this case. So for slide 9, usually it's about 6 or 12 people that participate in a 360 degree evaluation, and the ratee usually picks a couple, sometimes as many as 3 or 4, and the supervisor usually picks a couple, sometimes as many as 4. And those people pick them on the basis that they really want to get a broad spectrum of who is going to provide feedback. So you want people to pick a few people. But so that you get more than just, you know, people sort of picking their pets, perhaps, you get a random selection. And that way you get as broad a selection of feedback as you can hope for. Questions usually take 15 to 30 minutes. The results are tabulated and usually compiled by an uninvolved third party, so it's anonymous, and we'll get into that later. And a quick story about the Emperor's New Clothes, which is a parable for 360 degree evaluation. If you recall the story, basically the Emperor has these new clothes made, but the clothes aren't really clothes, and therefore they're invisible, so he's walking around naked. Well, for 360 degree evaluation, the Emperor would ask, you know, without it, he would ask, you know, "So what do you think of my outfit?" And everyone would say, "It's great, it's perfect, you look great." In 360-degree evaluation, the Emperor would anonymously ask his subordinates and even his people what they thought of his outfit. And the responses come back when they'd be like, "Sire, not only do you look like an ass, but it's not very pretty." So, the benefits are clear. Slide 10. This is, let's say, Paul, middle manager, group leader, unit head, whatever you want to call it. And the question involved here is, does Paul engage in all activities with a positive attitude, enthusiasm, and a smile? So here are the ratings. Paul gave himself an 8, the subordinates gave him about a 5, the peers about a 6, and the supervisors about a 7. So Paul has a pretty high opinion, but when you take everyone else into account, you can see that there's a varied view of how Paul is doing in this regard. And you can see that the responses, the low, the high, and there's usually some other statistics thrown in there as well, which we'll talk about more again later. What's also extraordinarily valuable and useful to have are some written comments that go along with just these numbers. And again, we'll get into this. This is just an example. So the subordinates might think, you know, well, Paul's supervising, he's just so serious, and he just needs to lighten up and be a kid too. So that might be some positive feedback for Paul. Or the supervisors, they might be more understanding, which is why they rated him higher. They're like, considering everything on Paul's shoulder, he's doing pretty good. Or peers, Paul does maybe an okay job, but he needs to get out there more and show staff that he's more fun and more playful. So that would be good feedback for Paul, and Paul would understand, well, although I think I'm doing a good job, I certainly have room to improve, certainly in the eyes of these other people. So you can see here this sort of feedback from all levels can really offer a lot of insight. So is it revolutionary? No. It's a pretty simple concept. It is definitely valuable. It's not done frequently. In fact, camps, I haven't really heard of camps doing this at all. It is frequently done in other organizations, though, other industries. And there is definitely a right and wrong way to do this. So, quick review of the benefits. Create an atmosphere of constructive dialogue. There's no one good or bad guy. So it's not just the supervisor doing it, it's just a bunch of people. So you really can't pin it on somebody anymore. You can't say, you know, oh, well, that's just them, you know, they don't know, or, ah, oh, they just don't like me. Can't really say that anymore because it's a bunch of people. So the ratings come from a variety of sources and levels. And more honest feedback is likely to occur because personal courage is less part of the equation. Giving feedback is a very hard thing to do. And when it isn't one person giving their feedback to a subordinate, it's much, you know, that requires personal courage. And when it's a person giving feedback from lots of people, the personal courage aspect can often be taken out, or at least severely diminished. Increased team performance and employee empowerment. Supervisors may be surprised that counselors, campers, and parents have a different view of the employee than they do. I've seen that happen a few times. And when one gets similar results from several people, it's hard to say there's just one bad apple. It's seen as more credible, and people are more likely to change behaviors. Last slide here. The results indicate improved performance. So it does work, especially when there are financial incentives, promotion is on the line, when they're personally driven to improve. Now the first two, and I'll mention this again later, are more advanced uses of 360 degree. But sometimes people are really personally driven to improve. And lastly, raters are privy to the general results. Now this is something that they tend to do in certain organizations. Academia is getting more and more into this, where basically they allow the students to see the professor's evaluations. And you'd be surprised how much that does to motivate professors who have tenure to change. So that is an option, but it does have to be done very carefully. It's an accurate way to heighten ratees' awareness of their strengths and weaknesses, as we'll talk about later. Research shows that 2/3 of managers' appraisals are wrong. It covers domains systematically, which we'll talk about when we go over the questions. It's anonymous, unbiased feedback, and it covers all the bases, all the different people's perspectives. And more than 90% of Fortune 1000 companies use them, so it is in widespread use in most other industries. So now let's talk about the nitty-gritty of doing a 360-degree evaluation. So here's kind of a little outline of what we're going to be going over. Picking a response set, picking the questions and format, design and analysis issues, and giving feedback and means of improvement. So that's what the next several set of slides is about. First, picking a response set. It really is best to have an anchor for every point. So this goes on two levels. One, you want a verbal description of the continuum. So if you're having something from 1 to 10, you want to have, you know, part of it be labeled as strongly agree, maybe just agree, disagree, strongly disagree. You want to have labels for the whole scale, not just 1 through 10 with good on one side and bad on the other. It's also best to have an example of an employee behavior at that level. This is usually done in general. It's only one example as opposed to an example for every single question asked. But you might want to say, you know, if you're going to rate somebody excellent, here's what we consider an excellent employee, and give a description of that. Second point, have a not applicable or a not enough knowledge to rate options. And, as I'll talk about more later, instruct raters to use that if they aren't very confident in their ability to rate somebody on a given domain. Third point, it's best to have 7 or more response choices, and 10 is the most common. In fact, if you use less than that, 5 especially, you'll find that if you're trying to look at people's performance, you can't discriminate. People tend to rate, you know, between 3 and 5 most of the time, and when you average these out, you're talking, well, what do we got here? We've got a 3.5 and a 3.8, you know, if you're trying to average these things out. And it's really hard to pick out 3.5 and 3.8 or 4.2 and 4.6. This doesn't make much sense to people, either the person receiving the feedback or the person trying to give feedback. When you do it on a 10-point scale, the numbers shake out quite a bit more, and it works out much better. On balance, scales tend to confuse people, so you want to use anchors in the 10-point range. Unbalanced scale would be something like, you know, the unsatisfactory, good, you know, better than average, excellent, and outstanding. So there's really only one bad choice there. People often get confused by such scales, and in an unbalanced sense, you don't get quite the range of responses you would expect, and the quality of feedback that you need. So if you go to slide 17, you'll see what a response set looks like. So this is one that's used by a lot of Fortune 1000 companies that do 360-degree evaluation. It's necessarily generic because this is used for all sorts of things, but it gives you an idea. You can see how you have an anchor along the top from, you know, strongly disagree to strongly agree, and how you also have sort of a verbal description so people can have an idea of what exceptional or what, you know, a 4 or 5 might actually mean. Slide 18 just shows some examples of other point scale systems if you did want to use another. These are some very common ones. Okay, so now let's talk about picking the question format. Open-ended questions, the short answer variety of things. It's excellent because you get an enormous amount of rich data. However, you really can't ask as many questions as you can with a survey. People don't like spending lots of time with this. And it's incredibly time-consuming for everyone all the way around. Structured interviews, same as above, an even richer source of data, but it's rarely done unless the CEO or director is the person getting the 360 degree. Survey is the one way it's really almost always done, just because it is quick, data can be computerized, scores calculated, respondents feel more anonymous, you can cover lots of domain areas, but if you do that survey method, as in the example back on slide 10, it is best to have space for comments if people want to. So picking the questions. The handout, the end of this file, you'll see several pages of questions and domains. So you can look through there and see what questions might be applicable to your organization, or they might just serve as a brainstorm list of questions that you might want to consider asking. Definitely don't throw in the kitchen sink, though. Only use questions that directly relate to the job description and that are highly relevant for organizational objectives. Remember, The shorter the better. It should take from 15 to 45 minutes. Often 25 minutes is a target. People get very bored. They get they tend to get sloppy. Their comments tend to go way down the longer it is. Usually this is around 15 to 30 questions. Now the ratee is often given the choice of picking anywhere from 10 to 40% of the questions. When they do this, they're often asked to do something like pick half the questions where you think they're going to rate you well, and half where they think they'll rate you poorly. This works on a couple of levels. One, you'll be able to get, hopefully, a little distribution there. And secondly, you'll be able to say, okay, what were the questions you think people would rate you well on and rate you poorly on? And you can see whether or not their self-perception on that division level actually worked out in reality when the feedback came back in. Slide 21 just lists professional tools of the trade. These tend to be a bit more on the expensive side, but the first three are probably the most common ones used by organizations. They're good for all sorts of ways. I did provide a website here if you want to go look at these. Useful tools, slightly on the expensive side, and perhaps more overkill than something a camp needs. The bottom ones are 360-degree evaluations of emotional intelligence. And since you have the CD, you can look at the emotional intelligence presentation or the lengthy information in the handout and see what's involved there. But there are 360-degree evaluations for EQ. The one I like the best is the bottom one, the bar on. I think that's a great assessment. So now on to slide 22, design issues. So four things here. First, honest feedback usually requires anonymity. So there are several things that help on the anonymous level. First, if raters don't identify themselves at any time, you'll find that if raters do have to identify themselves, the level and quality of feedback will go down almost to the point of being useless. So, a computer entry model works well. Basically, you have a computer set up, people come in, and they enter their scores, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it is, on the questions. You could set this up in Excel or even in, Microsoft Access or whatever program you like, and have a little section there where they can type their comments. Since they never had to identify themselves, and they weren't watched when they were doing this, people tend to like it. Very anonymous model. A secluded drop spot works as well, but if you're going to do that, provide people with a typewriter or a computer so that they can type their answers. Assurance that comments and responses will be averaged, obscured, and untraceable. People, might assume that, but they might not, so make that clear. But there are enough respondents so individuals can't pick out. So if you have only 3 or 4, people are going to have a harder time believing that. If you got 12, they probably are going to be more comfortable in providing really honest feedback. Something that's helpful but not necessarily necessary is that an impartial third party is really the only person to see the raw responses. They're the ones who tabulate all the data, tabulate the written comments, and present the final report. Sometimes, this depends on your organization, but people can find that comforting. If you want to get ultra into anonymity, the highest level, and sometimes people do this depending on the trustworthiness and the culture of the organization, is having the third party be the only person to see the results, and they do the review. So it never goes, no one else in the organization except the person being reviewed sees the 360-degree evaluation. This is often done when development is more of a sensitive issue. Communicate the intent of the 360-degree process. You have to convince people that they have a reason for doing this. Why is it worth their time? How are these results going to be used? Almost always, organizations start, at least for the first year or two they do it, doing it purely for development. They don't do it for promotion, pay raise, hiring, or firing. Those are very advanced uses of 360-degree, and there are definitely some safeguards that need to be in place if that's going to be the case. So people use it for development. And if you're going to do that, make it clear, are the results going to go into the employee's file, or are they going to be confidential? The report will be given to the person for development, and that's it. It's theirs to keep. People like to know these things. You need to train the raters to give appropriate feedback. So a couple slides on this. This is absolutely crucial. This will kill a 360-degree process dead if you don't do it, because the quality of the data you get back is inconsistent, and it's hard to make conclusions off inconsistent data. First, instruct the raters to use examples in the written comments when possible. So instead of just using generalized statements, if they can use examples, that's great. You know, obviously they'll have to be careful to keep themselves anonymous when they're doing that, but people in general don't have too much trouble there. Also, a number is always selected, you know, on the 1 to 10 scale, etc. But in the written comments, it's extremely helpful for the person giving feedback later. This is absolutely gold. If instead of just saying, you know, it's average or poor or something like that, they'll really give examples for the full range. So they'll say, well, over here, you know, Paul was really excellent. And over here, he was poor. But on average, he was here. But if he could just act more like he was there, that would be great. That's a general example. But the idea being that people will be able to understand, oh, this is when I was doing well, and this is when I wasn't, and I should try and behave more like that. Helps people an enormous amount. Also provide specific behavioral examples for the response range. Again, as we went over before, using the anchors and using, you know, things like excellent or strongly agree along the numerical order. Instruct the raters to focus on behaviors and performance instead of their relationship, their liking with the rate with the person being rated. You know, you would think this wouldn't help very much, but surprisingly it does. And also, as I mentioned before, instruct respondents not to answer if they aren't at least 80% confident in their opinion. Selection recap: who will be the jury? As many people as possible. The person definitely rates themselves. Peers, subordinates, superiors, and sometimes customers. 6 to 12. And again, how they're selected. It can be totally random, but usually more often the case, the ratee and a supervisor picks a couple people. Survey analysis. Okay, once you get all this data back, what needs to happen is if there's a high and a low outlier, they need to be eliminated. So if most of the scores, let's say it's a 1 to 10 range, and they fell within the range of, say, 5 and 8, but there was 1 9 and there was 1 3, those are outliers that you probably want to eliminate. Now, if the range fell, you know, between 4 and 8, and there was a couple 4s and a couple 8s, you know, and a couple 5s, a couple 7s, that's probably fine because they're within the kind of range. It's the outliers that you want to eliminate. Because in general, they tend to be, you know, the best friend and the worst enemy. And those people tend not to give the most clear feedback. If there are over 25 questions, you can consider using consistency checks. This is just something to throw out there. Basically, a similar question is asked again to see if you get a similar response. If you don't, you can be sure that the person was likely bored and that the quality of the feedback is not very high. For the numbers, you want to look at the average, you want to look at the distribution, so how many people rated on each point, and you want to know the high and the low score. So all of those informations you want to give back when you do the charts. So giving feedback. The part of thirds. As I mentioned before, one third of people are accurate in their self-assessments, so their views are in line with that of others. These people are the most effective, they're well-liked and respected. Third, rate themselves higher. These people tend to be the least effective and liked, and they tend to be higher up in the organization. And a third rate themselves lower. These people often are not very well-liked, and they're often not very effective. They spend too much time worrying about and trying to make sure people like them as opposed to doing their job well. The SWOT method. This is an extremely useful and prevalent framework for offering feedback, and human resources people almost rely on it as the de rigueur of giving feedback. So in a nutshell, it's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Strengths, just things people scored well in, and you want to celebrate those. Weaknesses are where people scored lower, You want to look at those, try and figure out why, look at the written comments, and again, if people are providing good feedback, you'll be able to look at times when the behavior was done well and times when the behavior was done not so well. Opportunities is just looking at ways to improve the performance. So you want to figure out, well, why are the reasons, you know, that you're low in this area? Or why are the reasons there's a gap between what you think and what other people think? And so you just want to look at opportunities for improvement of those weaknesses. Threats is really a more global kind of look at everything. It's a look at the strengths and the weaknesses and the opportunities, everything. And you want to look at other things that are going on. For example, maybe this isn't the right job for the person, and their weaknesses are more a result of the kind of situation and job they're in, and they need to choose something else that would be more suited to them. Just as an example. Feedback is often, people who go through performance reviews often say that it's confusing. Some ways to get around that are to be specific, to target 5 or 7 take-home points. So at the end you say, okay, let's review. There's 5 main things we want to keep in mind here. Dot, 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 dot. The chart method on slide 10, people love that. Very clear, very useful. The analysis points on slide 26 to go over the results. Even though you only have 5 or 7 take-home target kind of points, you definitely also want to do more than that. You want to have, you know, a paragraph and bullet point summary that the ratee can keep in reference. So you'll give them the report of the full 360 degrees so that they can reference it and use that beyond the 5 points. They almost always enjoy and use that information. Decide what will be acceptable evidence of change and try and speak in terms of actual behaviors. So for the weaknesses, you say, well, these are the things we like to see. Here's what this would look like. Often people are confused when you speak in more esoteric terms or more, you know, generalities. Or, you know, you say, well, we really want this to be better, but you don't talk in terms of what that better would look like in terms of behaviors. A SWOT method people tend to find very useful, and it's often also useful to set a time to meet again to discuss the evaluation. And this may not be necessary, and you can break the appointment if you need, but often people, when they've had time to sort of think about it and it sinks in for a few days or so, they may want to talk about things more. Last slide here, if it's done poorly, it can certainly create resentment. And then anonymity is crucial. Otherwise, you'll get who said that about me, did they really say that, tracking them down, this kind of thing. Use for development. The best use of 360-degree evaluation, especially the first few times out of the gate, is to honestly have the person's and organization's benefit in mind. You really want to help them. If you're trying to bash them, you're trying to, you know, do a reprimand and use 360-degree evaluation, you're going to kill the process. And people are not going to be too enthusiastic about doing it in the future. It's helpful if new employees are given the questions that they'll be held to. They like that quite a bit. And beware of using organizational averages or norms. So this is, if at your camp, let's say you had an average of a 8.5. Well, if you say, well, you scored a 6 and we really want you to be up at where the average is at 8.5, this creates problems. For one, it creates competition. So people might say, well, if that's the average and everyone's, you know, we want to make sure that I'm at least at or better than the average, you'll find that others will eventually start rating other people lower. Also, the focus really should be on individual development and not the score in relation to other people. Means of self-improvement, just a quick and dirty list. The most effective is certainly a personal coach and providing more feedback to the individual. There's others as well. Pitfalls and loopholes. Turns out that the most willing tend to be the least needy. So the people who are like, oh yeah, let's do it, give me a 360 degree. These are the people who tend not to need it so much. It's the oblivious, the high self-raters, that tend to need 360 degree more. Using it to nail, as I mentioned before, an individual or a group. This is deadly because people are going to be thinking of 360-degree evaluation as some sort of punitive tool. And once you go down that road, it's almost impossible to bring it back as a useful tool to really develop people in the organization. time famine. Doing everyone would be extremely difficult, if not impossible. One thing that does help is spread evaluations out over time. Don't try and do them all at one time. And consider doing really just select groups. Key administration, if there are groups that need development, you know, that's fine to do. Do a cabin or two. Make it clear that you're doing it for their development and not to nail them. And it works out just fine. Okay, pitfalls and loopholes 2 of 3. Utilize 360-degree evaluation, but raters see little or no change. It's a use it or lose it. If people do not change as a result of the feedback, they're going to be like, why bother? I have to fill out this thing. It takes half an hour. I'm supposed to do two of them. I've got better things to do. It doesn't make any difference anyway. So that tends to be a fatal flaw. Again, I mentioned several things before that make that not the case. And, for example, if the person meets back with the supervisor and says, you know, some months later to review their performance again, that can be very helpful. People not trained in giving receiving feedback, mentioned that already. Failure to recognize the demands of the situation, called the fundamental attribution error. This thing, I see this happen all the time. Basically what happens is you have somebody with an enormous amount of stress. You're giving them a task where it's one unit head for 80 children. And you're trying to say, well, you didn't really understand the children's needs very well. Well, the one person had 80 children, you know, or at times 100 children. It isn't likely that they're going to be able to understand all those children well, especially if they have numerous other tasks. So it's important to recognize this. It's almost always an outsider who can point this out, though. But I've seen this happen time and time again, where a middle-level person will get average ratings, and they'll just get, well, you're only average, try and do better, with the situation gets ignored completely. There's no action plan, steps, or timelines for following up on the evaluation and growth opportunities, and your best friend and enemy both rate you. Again, if that's the case, eliminating the outliers takes care of that one. Lastly here, if you go into this with the idea that the higher up the food chain you are, the more accurate your assessments are. In other words, if others' ratings don't agree with me, they're wrong. You've really missed the boat completely. Taking into account other people's perspectives is not only necessary, but crucial. What they think is important. It's how they relate to this person, it's how they react to them, how this person relates and interacts to the people who are rating them. That information is absolutely necessary. And the more that all these ratings aren't in sync, the more useful that information is. So again, it's not revolutionary, it is extraordinarily valuable, it is not done frequently, especially in camps that I've known about, and there is certainly a right and a wrong way to do this. It can be a valuable tool, or it can be something that dies as good idea number 37. Normally I'd take questions and discussion, but again, this has just been a very quick, sort of one-sided presentation. If you do want more information, please do feel free to email, call, or write me. And that information is available on the website noted below. Thank you.